Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. The Dunbar Lumber text line is buzzing. People are stoked to have us back. We appreciate all of that. We're very glad to be back as well here on the airwaves. Do we have Batch? Just getting him. Okay, Batch is going to join us momentarily here on Canucks Talk to get his thoughts here. Again, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Some of the texts would just spark too big of a conversation here, but just lots of general thoughts. I did like this one from Todd Has Bad Takes, which says, I'm digging Drantz's introduction of the word holistic for this new season. I'm all in. Please ring a small chime every time you say holistic. Namaste from Todd Has Bad Takes. I feel like it's a new buzzword. Like a couple years ago, it was bell curves, right?
Oh, I still use that.
Yeah, but it's not like as
I feel like I
fuzzy.
Feel like I've started to talk about base rates instead
sure,
of bell curves.
Sure,
but you'll see. We'll see
what will be the new word of the season.
I always,
maybe holistic.
You're always so trendy, Thomas.
No, I always glom onto like five words and just filter my entire experience through those words. That just is what it is.
Perfect.
Holistic.
It's the Brita of your life.
100%.
And holistic is one of them to start. Yeah. All right. Now joining us, of course, he is the play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our pal, Brendan Batchelor. What's going on, Batch?
Not a whole lot. How are you guys?
We're doing well, man. We're glad to be back.
We've got a lot going on, Batch.
I just want
to be clear.
A lot going on, obviously. How was Penticton, man? You were up there for a long time, too, huh?
Yeah, it was. So my wife is from the area. So we were there for like 3 weeks in the summer and then came back for a couple weeks and then like another 10 days there. So in the past, 2 months, I've spent more time there than in Vancouver. But glad to be back home after a good Young Stars and a good training camp. And we're right into the preseason tomorrow. So it's exciting time.
Yeah, Batch, you and I were up there for the same amount of time, but you had the foresight to bring your family. Which I think was a good call. I think you were probably in a better company, all told, than me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had to offset dealing with you at the rink. So,
you needed something pleasant to go home to?
It was nice to cleanse the palate that way by seeing my kids and spending time with the family.
So, Batch, obviously we could just have a conversation, but that's not what we're here to do. You're Brendan Batchelor. This is Canucks Talk. I'm going to throw a game at you that you have had no time to prepare for, and I'm hoping that we can use that as a...
Normally, you let me do, like, two normal questions.
No.
That's out.
No,
all right. No. Before we get to the game. Okay.
It's our first show of the year. I want to start out hot, and I want to throw a game that I've given Batch no opportunity to prepare for as a means of filtering a wider conversation about what we saw in Penticton. You ready, Batch?
I'm ready.
Okay, so the game is going to be called Solve for X. Okay? Solve for X. Yeah, that's right. Algebra, right off the bat.
I was going to say, I haven't done algebra in like 15 years, so this is going to be tough, I think.
I'm going to read you hypothetical Canucks lines for opening day with an X thrown in, okay? And I want you to explain and solve for X and Y, and then we can have a conversation about each one and keep moving down the order. You ready?
Okay, let's go.
So left wing X, JT Miller, Brock Besser.
Yeah, I like what I've seen so far from Danton Heinen. I think the two-way impact he could have as a sort of rangy forward that can also contribute offensively. We've seen him do that in the past. Like, I have no complaints with what I saw from that line at training camp. So Danton Heinen is, my X on that line at the moment, which I know isn't necessarily a very interesting answer, but until I see issues with that line, I'm completely fine with the way they've chosen to deploy it.
I was going to say, if real algebra was this easy, I would have been like a math whiz. I would have crushed
yeah,
math
no kidding.
In high school. It's like, isn't that like the most, like, lock it in line right now?
Well, I would say...
I'm going with Heinen too, of course.
I would say we're going to see different things I would say we're going to, like, as much
at some point in the preseason, yeah.
As much as I liked Heinen's game, and Batch used the active word, rangy, like, I don't think people are prepared for the extent to which Heinen's length is the sort of defining description of his game, right? Like, this guy's built like an amphibian, right? His stick checks aren't normal stick checks. It's like, imagine Dr. Octopus stick checking a guy in the corner, right? Like, he's just, like, way over the top on guys. He's got, like, a swimmer's body. I mentioned to his teammate, or his former teammate and current teammate, Jake DeBrusk, this, and DeBrusk was like, have you seen his hands yet? He's like, just a long gentleman. So anyway, all of that said, like, Nils Höglander killed it up in Penticton too. Talked about giving other guys a chance to acclimatize onto different lines. I won't be stunned if we see other guys filter through that once we get into preseason, but I like your answer on Danton Heinen. All right, ready? Line two.
Yeah.
Jake DeBrusk, Elias Pettersson, and X.
Daniel Sprong.
Ooh.
Where I'm going for this. Mm-hmm. I like giving Jonathan Lekkermäki the look there, and I'm perfectly ready to be wrong if he shows through the preseason that he's actually ready for that spot. But at this point, it's my opinion that it would be better for him to start in the American Hockey League and not be in that spot. And the one thing that was on the lips of everyone at training camp was, man, have you seen Daniel Sprong's shot? What a release. Like, he was, and I know we talked about how the goaltenders weren't necessarily put in a good spot because of all the odd man rush drills and things like that. But, like, Daniel Sprong was just roasting these guys every time in a drill, it felt like. So when you've got that elite level shot, offensive ability, I like giving him a look on the Pettersson line because I think they could really cook and get something rolling. So, you know, the two-way game, the questions there, I think, are still reasonable. And if that part of his game sort of rears its ugly head, then he's not going to stay on that line. But I saw enough of what I liked, especially with the shot, to think that he deserves a chance in that spot anyway. And that's where I would be leaning at the moment.
So with Lekkermäki, as you said, you think probably still best suited to start in the AHL. I think that's where I am too, but it does seem like camp moved the needle for him to be now more likely than he was, you know, a week ago to make the team. Like, how significant has it changed for you? Have the odds increased, if at all?
I mean, they have. I don't know how substantially. Like, the fact that he's getting that look, and it wasn't just a one-day look at camp, but it was all the way through camp, all the way through the scrimmage. You know, I think it's probably fair to assume that he's going to get at least one preseason game with those lines. It means that the organization's high on him. They're giving him the opportunity. I'm just not convinced at this point in his development that he's ready for that chance. But, you know, coming into Young Stars, let's say, if you had asked me, does Lekkermäki make the team, I would have said like 10% chance maybe, and now I'm more like 35-ish. So it has increased, but not substantially to where I would say for sure he's going to be on the team, or, you know, there's a better chance he's on the team than not.
Yeah, I think I'm higher than 35% personally, just because the defensive game in the scrimmage was legitimately very good, right? So he's looking more advanced away from the puck than I expected. And he's looking so dynamic as a puck carrier through the neutral zone and on the rush. I mean, everything, if I'm right that everything that this team did at camp and did in terms of player personnel decisions this summer was designed to amp up their ability to attack off the rush, and they've got this guy who looks ready-made dynamic to do it, and you maybe have like a short-term window to give him a look without a ton of pressure, given Dakota Joshua's presumed absence early. I mean, you sort of do the math, and it's just like, should we give this guy 6-7 games? If he looks as ready in preseason as he did at camp, I just, how's the answer no to that?
That's fair.
So if I'm flipping this question back on you, are you at the point where you're making Leckermacki your X in that formula, or are you not that confident on it yet?
Yeah, no, I'm not that confident on it yet. You're the one solving for X, Batch. don't turn this around.
I thought we were playing.
Yeah, I thought it was everyone was doing it. No, we're all engaging in Batch's playing of the game. He doesn't have an Uno reverse card. All right.
Hold on. I'm not done with this one yet.
How do I win the game if I'm not playing against
well,
anybody?
You win no matter what. You win by default, Badge.
You win by enjoying the friends you make along the way.
I'm not done with this one because I like Sprong there, but is Hoaglander, like, where does Hoaglander slot in the pecking order of a potential to move up? Because to me, that's more viable and likely for a top six opportunity for Hoaglander than next to Miller and Besser is alongside DeBrusque and Pedersen.
I think the thing we can take away from training camp is that, assuming Dakota Joshua can't start the season, I think that's where Nils Hoaglander's going to slot in, because Tockett has raved about that line with him and Garland and Ratu in the middle, and whether it stays that way or, you know, if Bluger's able to come back, is that where he slots in? But, you know, Hoaglander may end up the lineup, and, you know, based on the goal scoring track record from last year and the shape he came into in camp, I think he is a legitimate option on that line with Pedersen as well. But I'm also really intrigued to see how the bottom six plays out, because assuming health, if we say, okay, Joshua and Bluger are back and they go with Garland on that third line, then you're looking at a fourth line that could actually be pretty skilled and produce some offense with, you know, potentially Hoaglander and Pugh Suter and a guy like Kiefer Sherwood, if he doesn't slot in further up the lineup, as I'm sort of, you know, playing things out in my mind right now. And that, you know, I think you could make an argument that Hoaglander played some of his best hockey last year when he was in that fourth line role. And if you could use that line to, you know, try and chase matchups and get them out there in mismatch situations, that could actually be a really good spot for a guy like Nils Hoaglander to continue to produce at the level he has without so much concern about his two-way game, which, you know, has kind of been the knock on him to this point.
So, yeah. So the next one was going to be X, Pugh Suter, Connor Garland. You're going Hoaglander there, at least short term. And so then X, Teddy Bluger, X. You've got two X's to solve on this one.
So Kiefer Sherwood has to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If this is the way we're drawing up the lines, and then so you're putting Suter in between Hoaglander and Garland on the third line.
Yeah, I'll help you out. I'll help you out. Sort of the guys you haven't mentioned yet: DiGiuseppe, Nils Amon, Linus Karlsson, Sammy Blais, Archdeep Baines would be top of mind.
Yeah, which is interesting because I guess this is, we're assuming injuries here because.
We're just assuming that the guys who are out indefinitely aren't back in time yet. But I am assuming Bluger is.
Yeah, because I haven't really thought about any of that group as being NHL regular or top 12 forward to this point. I guess because we think so much in terms of, you know, Joshua being in there, Bluger being in there. So Kiefer Sherwood's definitely on that line. You're putting Teddy Bluger in the middle. Probably Phil DiGiuseppe based on track record, but I think if that's the way we're shaking out the lines and that's the way that we're going to look at things, that is the most open competition on the roster right now. Like, I could see any of those guys you named filling that role, and it ultimately at that point in the lineup it'll come down to what do you add. So, like, do you need another penalty killing forward? Then maybe Nils Åman gets a look. You know, do you want an aggressive forechecker to kind of be dynamic with Sherwood and hassle other teams? Then maybe it's DiGiuseppe. So I'm leaning towards DiGiuseppe because of how Rick Tocchet has deployed him, because of the trust he seems to have had in him in the past. But the real answer to that question is, like, could it be Archdeep Baines? Sure, could if he has a good preseason. Could it be Nils Åman? Absolutely. Like, there's a lot of guys that could be in that conversation.
See, and your difficulty answering this is another factor I think you have to consider with Leckermäki, right? It's like one of these guys is going to have made such a case that when you're like, hey, should we give Leckermäki 7 games or 5 games or however long Josh was out, you know, you have to be like, no, we can't afford to do that because of, right? X guy who earned a spot on the fourth line. Just another out that I think Lekaronecki has.
In that scenario, then it would be
Sprong.
Daniel Sprong.
Right. Well, you'd have Sprong still. So
and then it's like, okay, well, if Lekaronecki's struggling one day and we need a goal, Sprong can go up.
Yeah.
If we're holding a lead and we don't want to put the rookie in that spot, Sherwood can go up. Right. So I mean, just food for thought. All right. See, Batch, I guess we are kind of playing the game ourselves too.
I still need to win, though.
Hughes, X.
Hronek.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I think ultimately that's where it's going to end up. I understand the desire to, you know, try other things. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how that process goes through the preseason. But I think Quinn said it himself, like, why fix what isn't broken? And I know that how you deploy the other pairings gets a little more interesting and you know, creates further discussion. But, you know, whether it ends up being just situationally or whether they're on a pairing together at the start of every game, ultimately Hughes and Hronek are your best two defensemen, and you're going to have them out there in important situations. And I think ultimately you're going to have to fall back on having them on the same pairing too.
It does feel like the captain Hughes weighing in kind of settles this, right? Like, not that it would be impossible for them to go the other way, but that if he's publicly like, yeah, no, Hronek and I should play together, it's kind of the end of the discussion for whether or not they're splitting them up, right?
Well, it's what it shows, at least organizationally, is that the hockey club may think one thing and Quinn Hughes may think another thing. And of course, you're coming off a Norris Trophy winning season, your best year, Hronek's best year. Like, I can understand absolutely why he would say this isn't broken. You know, why would you try to fix it? But because of the lack of puck moving ability further down the lineup, and I'm sure we're going to come to talk about that and how you might deploy the other pairings, I understand why they want to try it. I'm sure they're going to experiment with it through the preseason, but you know, at the same time, if they were really seriously considering this, would Hronek not have been with one of the projected top six NHL defensemen on a pairing through training camp instead of Elias Pettersson, who I think we all expect to be in the AHL? Like, if you were really going to audition Hronek, would you not put him with Soucy and say, let's see how those guys look? And maybe that process is what carries out through the preseason. But I think ultimately it's going to be Hughes and Hronek at the end of the day.
Soucy and X.
Yeah, this is a tough one because immediately I would say Soucy and Myers because of how well they played together last year, because that gives you sort of a shutdown type pairing. But if you do that, then how do you feel about Forbert and Desharnais together on the third pairing? And I guess, like, we're not going to be able to, you know, talk about one pairing without talking about the other, because I think Forbert and Desharnais are both going to be important penalty killers for them. I think they're obviously going to like their size and physical ability, but do you trust both of them together if you ice the puck and you've got a D-zone draw and suddenly the other team has their top players out? I'm not sure about that. So, but do I want to go Soucy Desharnais either? Like, that's the problem. And this is why they are experimenting so much with Philip Hronek on a different pairing, is because, you know, if I put Desharnais there, then I'm not exactly wild about either of those two pairings, although maybe Forbert and Myers could turn into sort of the shutdown pairing, and Soucy and Desharnais would kind of be de facto the third pairing, which, you know, the more I think about it, I'm probably okay with at least trying that to start the year. But this is why they're really thinking about Hronek on a different pairing, because I don't necessarily like either way you deploy the bottom two pairings if Hronek's not on them. Now, they've got plenty of time. You know, at some point during the season, prior to the deadline, they could go and add another puck mover, and, you know, that bumps one of those guys out of the lineup. And I think that's probably something that we should expect to see. But for the purpose of this exercise, I'm going to go Soucy Desharnais, and I'm going to call them my de facto third pairing. And then I'm going to go Forbert and Myers and try and use them more in a shutdown role and see how that goes.
All of my X's have been solved. Thank you.
Do we get a grade? Final grade for Batch?
I don't get a solid starting goaltender X?
Well, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't include the other out indefinitely guys. So Demko X I thought about as like a who's going to, you know, but I don't know. I mean, X and X, like...
Yeah, I think... I think at this point we have to assume that She Loves is the starter, but that it will be more of a shared role than, you know, you might have previously thought. And if Lankinen shows well, I think he has the opportunity to steal starts until Demko's able to get back.
It feels like it's going to, I don't want to say straight 50-50, but something pretty close to that, right? Like, Lankinen's an experienced NHL goalie. I don't think they're going to give She Loves like an 80% workload right off the bat or anything like that.
Yeah, although they don't have a ton of back-to-back early in the year. So, you know, like, if we assume She Loves is your night one starter and you win on night one and he plays well, you're not going to go away from him. And if you get out on that road trip and you win a couple games and you're looking good, you're probably not going to go away from him. So I think it's more about how She Loves performs that will determine how much Lankinen gets into the net or not, at least early in the season. And then when the schedule picks up, assuming Demko's not back, although, you know, I heard Kevin Woodley talking on the morning show, like, the timeline for this sort of injury seems to be anywhere from 3 to 16 weeks. So there's
no
way to really pinpoint it. So, you know, if he's missing in late October or into November, then that's where we probably see more of Lankinen. Or if She Loves struggles or, you know, God forbid, suffers an injury himself.
Badge, I'm giving you a passing grade. I guess we'll see.
Like, I give him a B+.
We'll see. We'll see when the actual lineup comes out.
What could I have done better to get an A or an A+?
No, I honestly, you definitely deserve an A or an A+.
Locked in. I'm trying to improve. I love it, Badge.
You know my obsession with bell curves. I just want to, like, make sure that you're within the tubby part of it.
You can't grade on a curve when no one else is.
But it's a one person class grading on a curve.
Classic.
Batch, appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor from Sportsnet 650. Of course, we'll have the call of all of the preseason games here on 650, even the ones that aren't televised.
I thought that was a good game.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fine. It was a B+.
How dare you?
Well, no, it's just, I mean, so what are the real, like, I want to talk more about Lekkomäki in the next segment, but it feels like that's kind of the key question, is that third spot next to Pettersson and DeBrusk, and whether it's Lekkomäki, and then a lot of dominoes flow from that. In a way, whereas I look at, like, the Heinen one, it's like, yeah, it's probably going to be Heinen. It's not as much of a source of intrigue to me who ends up there as it is on the second line with Pettersson and DeBrusk.
Well, I also think it's important to sort of approach that exercise and take away this as, like, the big picture takeaway, which is that as much as we fill time, and we'll continue to, by the way, talking about things like roster battles and winning a job at training camp, like, 98% of every NHL roster in the hard cap era is set before a single player's steal touches ice at a training camp, right? Right? Like, the way these teams are built, you can't just usually blow up your plan because one guy had a better week than another guy. You know, like, that's not typically how this works. There is competition for roles and minutes. Like, for example, I don't think taking Heinen to the bank on that top line, like, I think that's a little bit premature, but I think the competition's ultimately going to come down to a variety of guys who are, no question about it, on the NHL
roster. Locked in
roster.
On the roster, yeah.
Whether it's Hoglander or Heinen or you know, could Sherwood upset the apple cart there or what have you, or DeBrusk ends up being that guy, right? Like, however it happens, it's going to be a guy locked into the NHL roster. And there really isn't much competition. Like, I think, especially if you're rejecting the idea that Hughes, Juulsen are going to start together, it's like, I mean, maybe there's competition between Juulsen and Friedman for the seventh defenseman job. And maybe because Joshua's status is up in the air, there's competition for the 12th forward, but that would be competition for the 13th forward in normal times. It's like, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
And yeah, even the Juulsen thing, it's like, well, they signed Desharnais to a multi-year $2 million deal, right? Like, are they really going to put him in the press box? You know what I mean? Which you would probably have to do if Juulsen starts. So it's like, even that doesn't seem real to me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we know, barring health, who the six defensemen are going to be.
Yep.
It would be very surprising to see one of them drop out. So it's just a question of how they're going
to
be
deployed. And I think
deployed.
You can take it to 7-8.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know,
so Juulsen and Friedman are clearly the 7 and 8. Yeah.
So it's there isn't a lot up for grabs, and I think that's why the Lekkomäki thing looms large, because I do think he's the one guy who sort of really has the potential to upset the apple cart with sort of, you know, knock-on effects down roster.
The Roar is back at BC Place for the BC Lions 70th season. Get your tickets now at bclions.com. More Canucks talk coming up here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your questions in now. We got an open hour to finish things off here, so lots to get into from training camp, looking ahead to preseason, what to expect, your questions, all of that coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. All right. That's some vintage sports radio rejoinder music right there. I feel like I'm doing like drive time in Pittsburgh, talking Steelers. You're with Goober and Crow here on Pittsburgh Sports Talk Radio.
Goober?
Goober. Yeah, they all have weird names like that.
What would your weird name be?
That's such a good question.
Which one of you would be Goober?
I'd definitely be Goober.
Goober and the Dodd Man. 970 the score.
That's what this music is. It's good. I'm getting pumped up for it. I like it. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Just
here.
Randomly calling players cowards.
Well, like, that's Antonio Pierce this week.
Yeah,
a bunch of guys making business decisions out there.
Woof.
After week three, tough times.
Where'd the cigars go?
Where no, it would be more like, I think the classic is like questioning their commitment for like filming a commercial or something. Or you know what I mean?
Ooh.
It's like, oh, he's posting too much on social media. Or like, remember when Tony Romo went on vacation to Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh my gosh, what is this guy doing? It's like, I'm probably having a vacation. Probably still wants to win. I'm going to guess. Gonna go on a limb here and say he's still into it. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So we talked a little bit of Lekkermäki there with Batch and just towards the end of the segment ourselves as well. But I do think it's worth dwelling on a little bit because, I mean, first of all, like this is just a classic training camp storyline, right? Like hot young prospect who's exciting but raw with anywhere from a distant... What?
Are you talking about Lekkermäki or...
As if you've never heard a prospect referred to as a hot prospect before. Whatever. That's fine. Who's got anywhere from like a distant to a maybe realistic chance to make the team and following that.
I think you've been watching too much of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
I know, that's Dom.
That's what I think.
That's Dom. Dom's all up to date on all the wife shows on TV. It's his favorite genre.
Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
I just started that yesterday.
There you go. It's a hit.
There you go. You guys can bond in the producer's booth over The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Love it.
Anyways, so it's like, it's just a classic training camp storyline and preseason storyline, right? Like, will this exciting but raw prospect make the team? And for me, you know, I've been doing shows with Bick the last few weeks here, and my kind of stance has been like, let's pump the brakes. And a big part of that was knowing how demanding Rick Tocchet is for all of his players, right? Like, you have to be able to check all the boxes, meet all the staples, do all of those things, right? The non-negotiables to earn playing time in his lineup. And not that it's a criticism of Lekkermäki, but just that I think for me it was recognizing that that's a very, very high bar to clear for a player coming over to play his first full season of North American hockey. But your point, which I think is a really good one, is the fact that they are all in, holistically all in, on this prioritizing offense and attacking off the rush. And that just happens to be his calling card, his greatest skill set. Well, that's interesting then. Like, that certainly boosts his odds. And then, you know, your reports from Penticton seem to be generally very positive. So, you know, like you said, you're maybe even up above 35%. I don't know if I'm quite there yet because I don't, like, it still feels like a lot to ask. But it's gotten a lot more real, I think, for me over the last week here.
Well, you know me, and our listeners know me, right? I'm Goober. And
that's
classic
Goober.
And I hate young players. Everyone knows Goober hates young players. Just as a general rule, I'm unconvinced. Like, you know, I go to every training camp, right? And there's always excitement about like a Jack Rathbone or an Akito Hirose.
It's always, here's a rule, it's always harder for like young player X to make the team than you think it's going to be.
Well, no,
always,
no.
Pretty much.
They're not close to the veteran player that you criticize, right? Like every camp, I love to do this. Every camp, I like to go and I like to watch reps of whichever defenseman Canucks fans are excited about,
mm-hmm.
and then watch reps of Tyler Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine to myself, if that young prospect looked half as good as Tyler Myers, what the excitement level in the market would be like,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, these guys are so good. The credible, regular NHL players are worlds ahead, generally speaking, of the young players coming in. And it's even in terms of little things, like just the ability to get to give the team pro reps over the course of a drill, knowing where to go, being able to handle pucks at pace, like the skill level, the baseline skill level of a fringe NHL player is so, so high. A good example at camp, battle drill down mm-hmm. low, Max Sisson against Danton Heinen. Right, I like Max Sisson. I think Max Sisson has some attributes that could make him a player. Probably a little bit low end, but a player. And then you see him in this battle drill against Danton Heinen. And, you know, Heinen can be a really good player for the Canucks, but let's not confuse Danton Heinen with, you know, a top star level player. This is a guy who's signed, you know, in October, in late August, three consecutive 1-year deals, right? Like, this is a guy who's had to work to maintain a spot in the league and earn himself a multi-year opportunity like the one that's ahead of him now in Vancouver, right? Like, this guy's had to scrape and claw to get here. And just the length that Heinen has in that battle, right? It's just this like reminder of just how cruel, how difficult it is to make the fringe of the lineup. These are my biases. I go into every camp deeply skeptical, and I had the exact same point of view. The pump the brakes point of view. Everyone knows Goober loves to pump the brakes.
Loves. Big pump the brakes guy.
big brake pumper. And then I'm watching camp unfold, and I'm watching this emphasis on rush attacking, and I'm watching what Lekkerimäki can do off the rush, not just as a shooter, but in terms of his puck carrying, in terms of his passing. You know, a sequence with Jake DeBrusk in a 2-on-2 where DeBrusk went for like a complicated toe drag move that just took a really mm-hmm. long time to unfold. And Lekkerimäki has like the sense to stop. You know, it's a tiny thing, right? Like a tiny thing, just a disciplined move to be at the net front and available no matter what chaos is happening to your left or wherever the puck is. Just stops, got his stick ready. He didn't score, but it was... It's like a mature pro level decision in the moment. And a lot of young players would like circle the net or, you know, be out of position or not be ready. And he is every like time and time again, he's hitting those benchmarks. And then you get to the scrimmage and like he had a sequence back checking through the neutral zone where JT Miller got held up. And I think it was in a battle with it might have been Elias Pettersson, the defenseman or one of the Canucks left side defenders anyway. And you know, he's able now. Miller was in a bad spot, right? Like it wasn't like he beat Miller in a one-on-one battle. Don't get me wrong, but he was there and he was able to pickpocket JT and get mm-hmm. the puck moving in the right direction. Well, I'm going to notice that. Another sequence, Quinn Hughes holding the puck up top in a delayed penalty situation, 6-on-5, end of a long shift for Lekkerimäki. It's Lekkerimäki who gets his stick into the lane and picks off the Hughes pass to JT. I mean, it's one thing to be, you know, picking off a Kirill Kudryavtsev pass, you know, and by the way, he had a great camp. I'm not like trying to disparage him by any means, but to be doing it against your own age group, it's another thing to do it against Quinn Hughes. You know, like that's one of the interesting things about that scrimmage environment is that the top players are playing the top players. And so the emphasis is more on like finding your hands and feet as opposed to all out tilt because those guys don't have a ton to compete for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you have sort of the middle six guys against one another who are competing for jobs or minutes, right? And you see a little bit more. And then at the fourth line, third pair, you've got guys scraping to make an impression and be the first guy up and maybe earn an NHL paycheck for a couple weeks. And the intensity ramps up even further, right?
Like that's the Phil DiGiuseppe zone.
Right, there's this gradient, right? But for Lekkerimäki to be involved in the top level game and for his play without the puck to be standout, in addition to all the other factors, I mean, honestly, I my view of it, having watched training camp, is that by no means is this settled, but as we enter the preseason, I think LeCara Mackey has a really good shot at earning a spot with the team to start the year.
The other thing that's interesting to me about it, and you mentioned this really briefly with Batch, but it's something I was talking about with Bick over the last few weeks as well, is, okay, this idea of, like, is it too much to put him with Pettersson and DeBrusk? Is that asking too much? But I actually think we've already seen kind of a version of, okay, we've got this guy that we really like offensively, but he's still learning the ropes defensively, but we want to play him up in the lineup, but we don't want to expose him too much. Like, that was Andre Kuzmenko while he was here last year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that didn't end well, so don't, but it sounds like it could be a negative comparison, but I think it's a lot different having to manage a rookie who's, what, 20 years old,
yep,
like that, than it is having to manage Andre Kuzmenko at his age.
Oh, don't underrate the Vancouver market's ability to parse a rookie's ice time in his first three games.
But so what I mean is that
we'll still do it.
Like, if LeCara Mackey makes the team and he's there on opening night against Calgary, he's going to take line rushes with Pettersson and DeBrusk. That doesn't mean, in all likelihood,
yeah,
that
doesn't mean he plays top 6 minutes.
That doesn't mean he's out there for every faceoff.
Totally.
Right? They've got a really easy guy to, hey, Kiefer Sherwood, defensive zone drop, boom, you're up, LeCara Mackey, you're missing the shift, right? Like, that's not a negative. That's a way they can smartly manage his minutes and try to develop him on the fly while still getting the benefit of his shot and his off the rush ability. Like, I think Andre Kuzmenko was playing like 10.5 5-on-5 minutes a game while he was here last year, but he was a top six forward, but they managed his minutes accordingly.
Well, and one thing this management group looks at, and one thing that they're very conscious of, and we've seen it and we see it every time they speak, we hear it every time they speak anyway, you know, unless you've got your closed captioning on, then you can see it as well.
Mm-hmm. Or lip reader.
They've got that understanding that the team you enter the season with isn't your team,
mm-hmm,
at the end of the year. I think my point more than anything is, like, in a world where you're going at least a couple weeks or you know, 5 to 6 games, 5 to 10 games, as Dakota Joshua works his way back from surgery, I mean, what's the downside? What's the downside to, mm-hmm, seeing what you've got? And, you know, I mean, managing the minutes, you know, it's like 10 minutes. You're not missing a shift. If you do things poorly, you might miss a shift late in games that we're leading. You know what I mean? But, like, for the most part, you're going to have regular minutes with talented line mates. You're not going to be on PP1. We're not going to throw, like, a ton of pressure at you.
Yeah.
And if you succeed, great. You've got this baseline of I can do it at the next level as you go down and play 25 minutes every night in the American League. Or you succeed to such a level that you're just an NHL player.
Because,
mm-hmm, that's the other thing, man. Like, sometimes these guys are just NHL players, like, right away. You know, sometimes it doesn't take a lot of time, right? Sometimes you come into the league and you're an NHL player right away, but it's going to take you a bit to be more than a middle six guy. You know what I mean? Like, think about the Nils Höglander experience.
Yep.
Like, right away, he was a middle six guy. Can he be more? He's only 23. I think we forget that a lot. You know, he's 20 days older than Archdeep Baines.
That's amazing.
Like, think about the difference, though, in, like, the hopes,
mm-hmm,
that people sort of place on a younger player who's completely unproven versus a guy who's, you know, done it for 200 plus NHL games, right? Like, anyway, my point being, when these guys hit, they tend to hit right away. Like, it just kind of is what it is. There's a lot that I saw from LeCara Mackey over the course of the last 10 days, that I sort of look at and think, man, if this guy's not an NHL player, he's damn close to it.
I do want to talk Höglander a little bit, but while we're just talking LeCara Mackey here and looking ahead to the preseason, by the way, preseason coverage here on 650, brought to you by Tiletown, as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season, receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. So, okay, looking ahead, they start their preseason slate tomorrow, and certainly LeCara Mackey seems poised to get a good long look in the preseason. What does, in your view, what does him winning the job look like over the remainder of this preseason, right? Because there's some players where it's like Atu Ratu would have to be spectacular, and even then it's no sure thing, right? Sammy Blais on a PTO would have to be spectacular, and even then it's no sure thing. Where does LeCara Mackey fit on that kind of scale of what he still needs to do, work left to do, to make it a reality, at least to start the season here in the preseason?
So, I mean, I think he needs to keep up the play away from the puck. Like, that baseline needs to keep getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he really has hit it to this point. Battle drills, scrimmage environment, on and on. The positional stuff, like he has leapt over a high enough baseline that I think that's not going to be disqualifying for him to this point, or at least it hasn't been so far. It hasn't
so
yet.
Keep that level in preseason games.
Has to. You have to hit that. You have to hit that, especially if they're going to get to a point where they're like, okay, we're not going to see Sprong there. We're not going to see Hoglander there.
Right.
Right. Like we're, you're going to get first look at this. That absolutely needs to keep getting hit. I do think he needs to show some of that dynamic attacking game, right? There needs to be a payoff too, right? It's not enough to be, he's meeting our baseline. It's like, and he brings this, right? So I think he needs to excel and show that he's a dynamic threat in terms of attacking, and specifically the way that the Canucks want to attack, which is with speed, you know, in transition, right? I think that needs to play. And I think provided that those two things are true, that's the path. Like, that's it. That to me is what matters. Breaking down, like, if you want to get a little bit more into the weeds in terms of, because players are fascinating, especially young players. Some of them need to develop more in some areas, and some, you know, like the areas that you'd expect a player with Lekkerimäki's profile to require development: play away from the puck, battle
strength,
strength, battle along the walls. It's there. Don't get me wrong. But I actually think it's more there in terms of offensive play than defensive play. And here's what I mean specifically. When attacking downhill or carrying the puck through the neutral zone, Lekkerimäki's incredibly dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, jumps off the ice. When the play is down low or in zone, I think he struggles to know exactly how he should support the puck. Like, I don't see the instinct to like work and find quiet ice away from the puck. I think there might be a mechanical, like a need for mechanical improvement in terms of his edges down low. So less a strength and size thing than a sort of ability to like pivot with that sort of pop you need to win battles along the wall as a smaller player. Canucks have so many guys who do it so well. So, you know, I hope our listeners can think about Garland and Hoglander doing like their Schmeagle act along the wall and how they're able to flummox bigger defenders, you know, with that edge work. That those edges don't quite pop at the level that a Garland or a Hoglander's do. And I do think ultimately he's going to need to add that element to be a guy who can like help drive play beyond being a puck carrier through the neutral zone on sort of in zone play at the NHL level. Like, There are definite areas where he's going to need to make progress. It's just that they're not sort of the areas that we'd commonly associate with a young offensive player. Like, I think the defensive awareness is there. I think the competitive awareness is there. You know, he's slight, but I don't think he's like shy in the corners by any means. It's really more about how he can win battles down low as a smaller player at the level that he'll need to at the NHL level, and how he can support the buildup as opposed to sort of leaving like change on the table when the attack is not north-south but is east-west or stationary.
Right. When it's on the cycle, basically, right? When you're trying to create in zone. That's interesting. And like, look, I mean, those are the kind of things that when you're talking about the gap between veteran NHL players and guys trying to break in, it's a lot of those little subtle things, right?
Totally.
Like how to get to the quiet area on the ice and be open and support the puck, and how to win those battles. Like, all of the dark arts and the little tricks that go into winning battles in the corner like that, especially as a smaller player like Connor Garland and Nils Höglander, right? They're really good at it, but that's a skill that takes some time to develop. So it's not to say that Lekkerimäki can't get there, but again, it's just like, it's really tough to get to that level, to be on that level of a team with Stanley Cup aspirations for a player as young as he is. It's not impossible, but like, it's a high bar to clear.
If he'd shown up, if he'd had that though, right? Like, then he's a top five pick and you never have a chance to have him in camp. I mean, the fact remains is that there's a lot of special tools. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy has a lot of special tools that jump off the ice. And it's just that sort of, I think the areas for growth for him are different than you'd expect, right? Different than I expected coming into camp and sort of watching him play. But, you know, one of my key takeaways coming out of that is, like, I think Lekkerimäki has or Lekkermäki has a more credible shot heading into the preseason than I would have expected when I first drove up the coke to Penticton. Can I bring up one other young guy quickly? Because I know we only have a couple minutes, but
yeah, whatever.
This is a topic only for a couple minutes.
So we don't have a guest on the other side, so I don't care.
I just want
Dom is gonna be like break, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's gonna play us off again. Kirill Kudryavtsev,
yes,
was like the only player who earned an in-group promotion. I mean, they also get elevated Ty Young for Dylan Ferguson, but in-group, he sort of earned the promotion up to play with Tyler Myers. Just got me thinking, like, again, these guys that hit sometimes hit right away. And I do think one thing we struggle with, especially as it's happening, and, you know, he was a little flat in the scrimmage. Like, it wasn't his best day on Sunday. So it's not as if he's going into the preseason with, like, real, like, he could break camp with the team momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have been some absolute pro-ready attributes that he's shown off throughout camp and throughout the Young Stars tournament, including the ability to play the right side, that I think have, you know, certainly caught the attention of Canucks coaches, management, and me, obviously, and other close observers. It's important to distinguish, however, between date of arrival and upside.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a player like Kudryavtsev may be nearly NHL ready, may be an option to play NHL games for the club this season, may fare well in a third pair role if he gets that opportunity. But, you know, like Victor Mete hit right away.
Mm.
And there was that moment where people are like, Victor, what could he be? And it's like a third pair defenseman, maybe. You know, Michael Delzato was like a 30-point guy.
Michael Delzato was like a Calder candidate almost. Like, he was taking the league by storm when he broke into the league.
So,
yeah.
So especially when you're talking about, like, defensively intelligent, reliable, left-handed, somewhat undersized, transitional defenders, sometimes they're smart enough and skilled enough and polished enough that they actually show up and are basically an NHL option right off the hop. I'm not sure if that's Kudryavtsev, but he's certainly shown enough across the last 10 days that I'm willing to entertain the possibility. But don't get that, like, carried away if that happens to be precisely how he hits, or if he's, like, ahead of, you know, Elias Pettersson or Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, you know, in his development path. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's got sort
Stop
of
it.
Top four game-changing upside.
He's on a roll on Kirill Kudryavtsev. You're trying to play him off?
Just a quick
this
note.
This is the deranged stuff that our listeners have been waiting all summer for. The deep dives on Kirill Kudryavtsev.
Yeah, just a way of framing it, right? Don't confuse date of arrival with real prospect value. I actually like getting played off. This is great. Oh,
you know,
one more thing. Kids, go to sleep.
I will say.
Kids, turn off the TV.
It is a convenient way to, like, jolt you out of it.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Forget this moment that our family will remember forever, kids. Go to bed.
All
I feel
right.
like I'm in Hobbiton.
Yeah, you know what? It's a little too grand.
That's our show, baby.
Somebody texted in, Trance talks like J.R.R. Tolkien writes, which made me laugh. That's, I don't even really know what it means, it was funny.
It means that I'm like, and over the dell and through the river they walked.
Yeah.
And then, you're like 18 pages later and you're like, they're still walking. That's what he means.
All right. On that note, we'll take a break. One final segment coming up here of our first show back. Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Dom, producer Dom, you have something you want to say about this rejoiner music.
Yeah, Zach Bryan and Noah Kahan, you know, two of the more
sure.
well-known musicians of the time right now. Just knock off...
Of the time.
Or just knock off Mumford & Sons.
Oh, weird.
All right. I'll be honest, I
There's folksy
name or
mandolin
single Zach Bryan or Noah Kahan songs.
Yeah, you can.
Yes,
the
you
season
can.
Of the Sticks. You know,
I don't know what that is.
Really?
What?
You don't know? You don't know?
You
all?
Are such a dad.
You know? You know? You should.
I don't listen to FM radio.
You should look up Noah Kahan. Look up his image and tell me that's not Chris Tanev.
Actually, I think I have seen that. Before.
Very, just short Tanev, yeah.
Yeah, for
with
sure.
Teeth.
That is very, very similar
it's
to
just
Chris
just straight up Chris Tanev.
But all right, I'll take your word for it, Tom.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it's a psyop along the same lines as Adam Fox is as good as Quinn Hughes.
Are you saying Noah Kahan and Chris Tanev have never been in the same room together?
I absolutely have never been in the same room together. Noah Kahan, good singer, heck of a shot blocker.
Heck of a shutdown defenseman, man. Shouts to him for getting that contract.
How about
summer.
Jamie's doppelganger, though, in the NHL?
Oh, yeah.
Are we
that
not going to talk
wild.
About this?
Sorry.
Was it Burakovsky? Or,
yeah, Andre yeah. Burakovsky.
So A-Dog retweeted this and brought it to my attention. Andy Cole from The Morning Show. The Kraken did this, like, one of their beginning of the year photo shoots. And the picture of Andre Burakovsky, he was like, this is a doppelganger for Jamie Dodd, and he tagged me. I was like, this is, I was, normally people are like, oh, it looks just like you, and you open it up, you're like, yeah, I don't know, I can kind of see it, I guess. This one was like unsettling. I was like, oh man, that actually looks a great deal like me.
I think that's just the
in
photo,
front of
though.
The fish.
It does look a bit like you, yeah.
But I was like, is this like a deep fake situation?
I don't.
What's going on here?
I feel like that's just like
it's an
illusion.
One-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree. Because I was like, I've seen Andre Burakovsky before. It's never like clicked like that. So there's just something about like the lighting or the pose or whatever going on there. But yeah, I was very struck by that. Yeah,
I don't
when
see
When A-Dog
it.
Tweeted me.
It's a very serious Jimmy Dodd pose from
that's right, yeah.
From Burakovsky.
In front of a wall of fish for the Seattle Kraken. Maybe that's what made me think of it.
What?
I don't know.
So you have a wall of fish.
Yeah, that's classic me, posing in front of a wall of fish.
So I've got a bunch of Canucks futures bets that I'm curious to discuss, but should I save them and like dole them out slowly as we do the whiteboard over the next few weeks?
I don't know. I mean,
or do you want to do a whole segment on gambling?
We can. Well, I don't know about a whole segment, but we can do some.
Maybe we can get a dole sponsorship.
We can do some Canucks futures here.
We can absolutely fill a whole segment, bud. Don't underestimate
us. All right. Well,
us.
Well, let's start and see how we do.
Okay.
All right, so Canucks future. So, okay, first of all, what we didn't, I don't know if we want to make like our, is this too close to doing predictions here? But we mentioned in the whiteboard, what is it, 99.5 point total roughly for the Canucks.
Yep.
And then like minus 280-ish to make the playoffs.
Yep.
So right off the bat, can I put you on the spot? Like,
well,
what do you think?
So the, I mean, I make the playoffs minus 290 or 280 or whatever. I mean, yeah, like that's. The implied probability
sure,
of that
but
is,
what I mean is like as a betting proposition, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or is it just accurately priced in your view?
No, I mean, I think it's probably accurately priced given that it's, you know, 75% probability. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably an attractive bet. I think their probability is absolutely north of that, to be totally honest with you. Like if you get it at plus 290 or plus 350 or whatever, I mean, you're buying us 75% probability event. I think that's fine. That's well worth your time. I mean, I like to play it a little spicier than that. But if you want, I put it this way: I wouldn't recommend betting the no side.
Sure,
even at you know the 25% implied
side.
Probability.
Because yeah.
I think it's more remote than that they miss. Just given that, you know, I do think this team's entered a new stage. Right, I don't think they're in the we're a playoff team if everything goes right. Mold now. Like, I think you can overcome uncertainty on the Demko front, right? I think you can overcome like two of. So here's something that I was looking at during the offseason that sort of colored my perspective. Let's say it that way.
Okay.
About sort of where the league is going. And I talk a lot about this in terms of we now live in this world where teams are scoring at a far higher rate of shots.
Mm-hmm.
League average save percentage is down to 905, right? So you're talking 9.5% of shots or goals, where only a decade ago it was more like 8%. As that changes, right, as shooters win the war against goaltenders across the board, and as goaltending durability questions, workloads diminish, right? So as NHL shooters spend more games facing lesser goaltenders, because that's a big part of the story too, and stack their rosters with skill, including on the fourth line,
mm-hmm.
right? As all of these changes have occurred, I think you're living in an environment where quality finishers, the highest skill players, have more ability to impact the outcomes of games than they did 15 years ago. I mean, you think about Sidney Crosby's first Stanley Cup that he won, right? And it's like, who was the hero of Game 7? It was Ruslan Fedotenko,
yep.
right? And how many times in hockey history can you think about, you know, like the moment that the guy got through and it's like Darren McCarty scored the game winner,
mm-hmm,
right? Like
mm-hmm.
the way that the league was in a world where goalies are that dominant, your third liners, your muckers, especially with the way whistles don't get called in the playoffs, or penalties don't get called in the playoffs, are more likely to have, or at least as likely as the top players, to have the decisive impact in any given game. And that's changed, and that's why we saw this McDavid run, right?
Yeah.
That's why we saw, like, you know, this Barkov-Forsling axis that gave the Panthers the ability to actually hang with the Oilers at the top end of their lineup and overpower other teams at the top end of their lineup on their way to the Stanley Cup final. So we sort of live in this different world. Now, here's sort of, I think, one of the best rough ways to encapsulate this. 17 players in the NHL last year had 90 points or more. How many of those players do you think played for non-playoff teams?
Ooh, 17 had 90 points or more.
17 had 90 points or more.
Is that like one?
It's two.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby and Kirill Kaprizov. And those teams did not miss by much.
No.
Right? So it's like, we can talk at length about things like goaltending uncertainty, or do the Canucks have enough puck moving on the back end, right? Or whatever. If this core plays the way they did last season, right? If JT Miller maintains his defensive gains mm-hmm. and hits 85 points or more, right? That'll make him an elite contributor. If Pettersson is the Pettersson we saw in the first half as opposed to the second half, if Quinn Hughes remains one of, if not the single best defenseman on the planet, if Filip Hronek remains, you know, in accompaniment with Hughes, a credible top pair caliber guy in terms of his impact, and if Besser remains a top of the lineup scoring option, I mean, and then you can overcome the uncertainty on Demko,
mm-hmm.
right? I even think you can overcome one of those other five things falling back to earth.
Right. One of those, like, top five players.
I even think you can overcome two of those top five things falling back to earth, provided the other three engines are still going.
Mm-hmm. And provided probably at that point, like, the depth options work out. You know, some other things go right for you down the lineup, right? If you're talking two guys falling back.
Three? I think you're in for a gut check time in the last few weeks of the season, but mm-hmm. I even think you can make the playoffs with just two elite guys going at an elite rate, provided that, you know, a few other structural things don't completely
mm-hmm.
mangle you.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about it that way, I view this Canucks team as having some serious margin for error in a way that I didn't believe was the case last year, like going into the season, for sure.
And as they didn't believe was the case going into last year,
right.
as Jim Rutherford said, right?
Sure,
memorably.
But Rutherford also reiterated it right before training camp opened. It's like, I think there's margin for error this
Although year. Patrick Alvin, I believe it was to IMAC, repurposed the Rutherford quote, but applied it to Stanley Cup contention.
Right.
Which I thought was very savvy of him. It's
yeah.
like, yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that illustrates how far the team has come under Rick Tocchet from,
sure.
you know, from this time last year, where it was everything breaks right, we make the playoffs, to, hey, everything breaks right, we might be challenging for a Stanley Cup. Like, I think, like, okay, I can buy that. And I think that's what, like, that's the flip side of what you're talking about, right? Is they have this margin for error. So even if some things at the top of their lineup don't work out, they can still be right there challenging for a playoff spot potentially. The flip side of that is, if some things go your way again, right?
Yeah.
Not even necessarily to the extent they did last year, but then you could be really cooking going into the playoffs.
So, yeah. So anyway, I think this is a team with margin. I think the Pacific is sneaky. Like, I think the Pacific is weaker than the public realizes.
Mm.
Like, I think Calgary being having an over-under, a public over-under set at 81.5 means that the market hasn't quite adjusted to the what I believe to be the reality, which is that there are three true bottom feeders in the Pacific, with Anaheim being far more likely to level up fast than the Flames are to maintain a like fringe playoff team level. Mm-hmm. And that's my view of it. I would expect all three, by the time you get to like the Sharks at a 63.5 over under, I wouldn't recommend taking the under there. But like the Ducks at 70.5, like I'd way rather have that over than the Flames at 81.5 by a mile. But that's also because I just
you do love the Ducks.
The Ducks are my Charlie Brown football, right? Like I'm gonna try and kick it again. Cutter Gauthier. Anyway. And then like the Kings 96.5. The Kings having only three points shy of the Canucks. Look, they have Byfield and Brant Clark that are, pretty important outs for them. Guys who could just, we could be in November and it could be, hey, Byfield's a point per game guy now and is legitimately winning games. And Brant Clark is a stud top pair righty defenseman and a star level contributor. And wow, that team's leveled up. So they have some outs here to have more ceiling, but I don't know. I don't think that team should just be 3 points shy of the Canucks in terms of an over-under. I'd way rather hold the Canucks over than theirs.
Especially to your point about the importance of elite, like truly elite offensive contributions at the top end of a lineup now, right? And they have really good players. I really like Adrian Kempe, right? But he's not going to be in the top 20 of NHL scoring in all likelihood.
Well, he could
right?
be in goal scoring.
In goal scoring, but you know what I mean? Yep. In terms of overall like offensive superstar production, he's probably not going to be in that.
No.
Is there a chance that Byfield has like a monster breakout?
Yes.
Sure, I guess.
Yes.
But like that's to have one of those guys.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So it's like that is still they've got good players up and down the lineup, but I think that's a very fair question to have about the Kings. Is their top end that good to have them in contention with the Canucks and, even Edmonton or something at the top?
Yeah, and I'd say you should have the Kings materially in a materially different tier in terms of upside case than the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's my view going into this season. And then Vegas to me is the interesting one. Okay, because I do think that there's a my kung fu style is better than your kung fu style element to what we're about to see unfold with the Canucks and the Golden Knights. And I actually think it's enhanced by the fact that both Tocchet and Bruce Cassidy are working on John Cooper's
staff. Team Canada staff,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I do think that's an interesting part of this, too. The Canucks, there are worlds where the Canucks offseason plays out differently, where the Canucks build coming into this season could be much more similar to Vegas than it is to the way they look at camp right now. Specifically, the sliding doors moment of if Lindholm had decided to stay. And make no mistake, like the Canucks tried to keep Elias Lindholm.
Yep.
They made a credible offer, not dissimilar from where Boston landed, to try and get him to come. Canucks players were actively recruiting him. Spilling over even into the year-end media availability where like Demko was legitimately stumping to keep him. This team wanted to have that like elite center depth. And I think they felt that they had enough lottery tickets on the wings that that's how this cookie had crumbled, they would have felt comfortable with that. They would have felt comfortable coming into camp and the story being, LeCaramacki and Baines and Carlson and some of the guys that would flesh out, their bottom six on the wings. That was plan A here. Okay. Instead, the Canucks decided to deepen their forward group, really lean into being a rush attacking team, right? Sign a high volume of sort of two-way wingers with speed, and we're going to see them go in a different direction. Vegas, meanwhile, doubled down on the middle, right? Marchessault was permitted to walk.
Yep.
Chandler Stephenson, who often played the wing for them, was permitted to walk. And they've got this absolute murderer's row of centers and a bunch of question marks on the wings, right? And so you've got this sort of philosophical clash almost between how Vegas is built and Vancouver is built. How Vancouver is built. Vancouver's really emphasized wing speed. Vegas is going to try and cobble together enough wing contributions from Ivan Barbashev and Keegan Kolesar and Pavel Dorofeev, and hopefully Mark Stone plays 30 games and on and on down the line.
Victor Olofsson.
Yeah, is Brendan Brisson ready to step up? Alexander Holtz, they traded for Alexander Holtz, a deeply flawed player from the New Jersey Devils. So you know, we'll see. We'll see, right? Like the Vegas has the blue line depth. Vancouver has the blue line top end. Vegas has the, you know, stud centerman 1 through 3, 1 through 4. If they want to roll with Eichel, Hurdle,
and Carlson and Nick Waugh
on different lines. Like, you can do that. They could have four lines with a absolute no question in my mind, top nine quality center. And just sort of cobble together what they need on the wings. They can also play Waugh on the wing. They can also play Hurdle on the wing. I mean, there's a whole host of options. Vancouver's got all this depth on the wings and is going to try and sort of hobble into the playoffs with the bottom six center depth that they have, right? That clash of styles to me is fascinating, and I'm really curious to see how it plays out. I know a lot of analysts would say that the Canucks belong in a different tier than the Golden Knights. I'm probably not there, but I don't think LA... Like, I struggle with the idea that Edmonton, who I do think is the best true talent team in the league, is further away from where Vancouver and Vegas sit currently than
they are from where LA is.
Correct.
Interesting.
That's what I struggle with.
Yeah. Yeah. Vegas is just, they're always such a fascinating team, right? And the Mark Stone thing is going to hang over what they do, right? But yeah, I think like having them in a battle, if you're projecting this as Edmonton wins the Pacific and the Canucks and the Golden Knights battle for 2-3, I think that's very reasonable. There's lots of ways it could turn out a different way, of course,
sure,
as well.
Like,
but
Anaheim
that seems very
the party.
Yes, of course. Number one way it could turn out differently is Anaheim's incredible.
All right, let's rifle through some futures and some fun takeaways from them. Okay, ready? I'm going to do some individual awards futures for the Canucks.
All right.
So here's one that stuck out to me right away. Art Ross, the Art Ross odds.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for the leading points getter. Pedersen plus 6,500.
Okay.
Both these guys are long shots.
It's so hard to win the Art Ross now, man.
Totally. Like,
oh.
Well, Connor McDavid exists.
Yeah.
So does Kucherov. JT Miller plus 8,000. What's your reaction to that?
Miller
scored 12 more points than he did last year.
The markets are really high. And I think just in general, outside of Vancouver, people are still really high on Elias Pettersson.
Mm.
Like, normally there's always this complaint. I mean, last year with the tier 3B thing for Quinn Hughes, right? That's like, oh, they're not respected enough outside Vancouver. They don't pay attention. Now it's flipped on Elias Pettersson, where it's like people outside of Vancouver are way higher on what Pettersson can do this year than people here in Vancouver are. That's my immediate reaction to that. I don't think it's like a slight on JT Miller. I think it's like people are still like, yeah, Elias Pettersson's awesome. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm presenting it without comment. Calder.
Okay.
Calder. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, it was pointed out to me, and I hate to say that this was sharply pointed out to me by Tambier, but it was, that Artturs Seelovs, you can't find a price listing for Artturs Seelovs, but Artturs Seelovs, I feel like, is a...
That's an interesting
long shot.
Yes, yeah.
You got to email into your books and ask for, you know, an others on request.
Can you take the field?
But I strongly think that might be an interesting one, depending on the juice. Archdeep Baines, plus 10,000.
That's going to be a pass for me.
And Jonathan Lekarimäki, plus 5,000. Both are passes, to be clear.
For sure.
But I wanted to caption it.
It's nice to be listed.
It's nice to be listed. Yeah, and Seelovs is not, and he should be.
Yeah,
right?
That's
the one that's interesting to me, because at least I can I can shape that narrative. You know what I mean? Like, I know what that would look like, even if I don't know how likely it is. I mostly wanted to bring up those Calder odds to caption the following, because this is one of my favorites. Selke odds.
Mm-hmm.
Pettersson is plus 3,300.
Mm-hmm.
And for reference, Sam Reinhart is plus 3,000. He was a finalist.
Yes. Yep.
Not enough juice for me there. JT Miller, however, is plus 10,000. Same odds as Baines for Calder. Like, if this team is an elite defensive team, and I think we think they have a path.
Certainly a chance they can be, yeah.
Okay.
They were last year.
And remember, awards narrative stuff, right? So if Canucks goaltending is in question throughout the season, the Canucks remain a lockdown defensive team, and some momentum builds for a Canucks forward to be strongly considered to lose to Sasha Barkov, but at least be a finalist.
Yes.
At which point you'll get a decent cash out. isn't Miller the play? Like, Miller's the guy who plays the matchup role. Miller's the guy who plays with that, like, classic snarl that people love. Miller's the guy who held McDavid in check 5 of 7 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean,
well, and look, this to me, what this illustrates is, one, what I was saying about the Elias Pettersson thing, right? Where the conversation is very different in other markets than it is here. But also, this is an example of, like, not being fully plugged in on exactly how the Vancouver Canucks play. Because JT Miller gets the matchup minutes. JT Miller is going to get the matchup minutes. JT Miller has super defensively responsible Brock Besser playing next to him. He has a good chance he's going to have super defensively responsible Danton Heinen playing next to him. They are going to build that line to go up against other teams' top lines, right? And you might think, and look, we've all seen Elias Pettersson be really good two-way defensively. He can be a beast in his minutes, but if he's not playing against the other team's top players, he's not going to win the Selke. It's just going to be very, very difficult for him to be in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, people start to look at it more closely. And here's the other thing. The Selke's a reputation award. Well, Miller's resume of high-end defensive play at center is now 1 year old, right? Like, we've seen it once, okay? But the second year, maybe people start to pay attention to it. You know? That's sort of where, look, plus 10,000? I just think that's out of whack. That's a misprice. Given what we think this team could be defensively and what JT Miller's role within that would be. So I think that's a misprice.
Yeah, that definitely is. Like, he should clearly be the number one Selke odds guy on the Canucks.
I think
without
so.
A doubt.
I think so.
He's going to be the matchup center, and he was really good at it last year, right? And, like, don't you just think, too, given how Elias Pettersson dropped off in the second half of last year, that they're going to, at least early in the year, try really hard to put him in favorable offensive situations, get that confidence up,
They should do it anyway because Pettersson's really good. You know? But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be stunned by that at all. Quinn Hughes plus 700 to repeat as the Norris winner. That's tied with Adam Fox. The PSYOP continues. Kale McCarr, favorite, plus 250.
Whew. I mean, look, it's fair to have McCarr as the favorite. It's fair to have Kale McCarr as the favorite.
Of course,
but
it's fair.
Quinn Hughes should be number two with a bullet.
Kale McCarr is amazing.
Quinn Hughes should be number two with a bullet, though.
I think so, too. Although it's hard to repeat.
Well,
people get tired.
The Norris has changed. The Norris used to be the easiest one to repeat.
Right.
Guys would just be like, yeah, Nick Lidstrom's still the best defender. Here's another one.
Now it's for sure the Selke.
Now it's like, well, yeah, now the Selke is easy. So now people do get tired of it, but that's interesting. All right, we're back, and we're going to be back tomorrow as well. First preseason action for the Canucks tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for the text in.
Good to be back.
We really appreciate it. And Sportsnet Today with Josh Elliott-Wolf and Randy Janda up next here on Sportsnet 650.